I guess we should say something while he's doing
Yeah, we should just, what you should just say is what exactly whatever comes into your head. I guess we should say something. Yes, we should. Welcome back to another episode of 1980s Now, a weekly examination of the importance of 1980s pop culture and its influence today. My name is Will, and joining me as always are my friends and co-hosts, Kat and John.
Hi, guys.
Hi, everybody.
I'm laughing because I was practicing in the car earlier, you know, because I knew we were just doing, I was on my way home.
You were practicing what in the car? This show?
Just that. Welcome back to another episode of 1980s Now, a weekly examination the importance of 1980s pop culture and its continued influence today.
And he's still practicing.
And I'm going to get it right one day, John. And I was
practice
so,
pays off.
I was so proud of myself in the car, you know, and now I'm doing it now and I'm hearing myself and I'm messing it up. Anyway.
We're proud of you, Will.
And before I forget, because we could make it through the whole show and then I'd have to record this and add it in back to the beginning, but I'm not doing that now because I'm remembering to say, please remember to check out John because in addition to his co-hosting duties here, he also hosts his own podcast, Gen X Grown Up.
Thank you.
There you go.
Yeah. You want that? Right.
Hey, and today, as we have been doing every week since we started recording again in 2024, we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube to include you in the show. So follow us on Facebook and or subscribe on YouTube to join us next time. And you're going to want to maybe because on many episodes, just like this one, we're going to be giving something away because this episode is brought to you by the amazing folks at Kokomo Toys and Collectibles. More horns. There you go.
Yay.
Thanks to Kokomo, we're going to be giving away some pop culture collectibles to someone in our live audience.
Ooh.
There you go.
Can't wait to see who wins.
Who will it be?
I don't know. Hey, on today's show, we're going to review current news stories related to 1980s media, including Brent Spiner returns to Night Court. Ooh. Quite honestly, I had forgotten he was on it, but it that's cool. It's really cool. I like to talk about that. Then we got a number of stories related to the Academy Awards that just happened last Sunday, including did Robert Downey Jr. snub an 80s favorite, Kiwi Kwan? The twins stars reunited but for a reason you might not expect, I suppose. I didn't see it coming. Field of Dreams was lampooned during the Academy Awards, and Kevin Costner has reacted. And our teens, contemporary teens, scared of nuclear war, the director of Oppenheimer has an answer. That's that. That's all we're going to talk about. Then we're going to get out of here.
All right. Well, let's get to it then.
Yeah.
All right. Ready for the news.
Yeah, let's get caught up on 1980s news. Where do you guys have to be? Shit.
nowhere else.
There's nowhere I'd rather be.
Yes.
I just got to wash some dishes after this, I think. I got to go to the kitchen.
Yeah. It's happening again. I do have to wash dishes after this.
What if my camera's in the right place? I'm sure it's fine. Yeah. We'll take a look at it later. Oh, am I saying this out loud?
Oops.
Hey, as reported by Collider, the Wheelers return to Night Court. So yeah, as we just mentioned a moment ago, Brent Spiner and his co-star Annie O'Donnell made their debuts on Night Court in December of 1985 as Bob and June Wheeler on the season 3 episode, The Wheels of Justice, Part 1. The two became fan favorites for their darkly humorous stories of woe from losing their home, their business, and a dog to a tornado, who was incidentally named Toto, by the way. One of the jokes in that episode, to buying the newsstand at the courthouse for an outrageous markup. In total, they appeared together in 6 episodes throughout seasons 3 and 4. I watched every episode of Night Court. You know, I would have been 14 years old at the time. I don't remember. And of course, Brent Spiner, who would later on become Data in the Star Trek franchise, he wasn't that character yet. So that would be my first association with him. So I don't remember this at all. Do you guys remember this?
No, I didn't watch enough of it. I saw plenty of it, but I didn't see every episode. Okay. Well,
it depends upon your point of entry for Night Court, because my point of entry for Night Court was, I hear Data used to be on it. So I then went back and watched the show I never watched to see his Wheeler stuff.
Okay.
Because Brent Spiner was a relatively unknown in 87 when he took the role of Data on The Next Generation. And so I'm like, who's this guy? And you and there was no IMDb yet, but you'd look and see what had he done. And like, he was on Night Court, really? I have that one on tape. And so I actually only saw those for a long time. I wasn't a regular Night Court viewer, so I actually know the Wheelers because of that way, because I came in the other direction.
That would have been interesting for me to see at the time, John, because he was so convincing as this, you know, android. And obviously, as he portrayed the character of Data, he doesn't act like a human. He acts more like, you know, an artificial human. And so well, he does it such a great job that I would love to have seen him in anything else. And his portrayal as this character, Bob Wheeler, is as far from Data as you can get.
He's just super hillbilly. He just kind of has a big drawl when he talks and kind of a dim-witted kind of thing. Very anti-intellectualist, you know, you would be in Next Gen.
And I came across a video from 2019 where Spiner told a crowd gathered at the Big Apple Comic Con that he had hoped that Night Court would be rebooted, but then Harry Anderson, the star, passed away just a year earlier in 2018. But he also explained how he came to be this character. He said when he went on the audition, he did a character that he would do to entertain his friends when he was a kid, that as teenagers they would go to... you know, Howard Johnson's or one of those places, Denny's, that type of place.
And okay,
he would order as this Southern character, this kind of dim-witted Southern character that ultimately became Bob Wheeler.
Let me get a grand slam, biscuits and gravy.
And he could do that. He's from Texas. He's from Houston, so he's allowed to do that, as they say.
Is that how that works?
With regard to his star, Annie O'Donnell, she would go on to have play various smaller roles in shows like Grey's Anatomy, Murder, She Wrote, and NCIS. She was also in Transformers Dark Side of the Moon and Black Sheep. Well, after 39 years, the Wheelers are reuniting on Night Court to appear before Harry Stone's daughter, Judge Abby Stone, who's played by Melissa Rauch, who also produces the show. We've talked about this before. And this time, Dan Fielding, who's played by, you know, series regular since the inception, John Larroquette, who once derided the Wheelers when he was a prosecutor, now is forced to defend them in court. Comedy ensues. When Bleeding Cool News asked O'Donnell about reuniting with Spiner and Larroquette on the Night Court set, O'Donnell told them, quote, a half a lifetime went by between when we had seen each other and done the show last. It was like that gap had not happened. It was like we were there like yesterday, and it all fell into place.
That's so cool.
So are either of you guys still watching the new rebooted Night Court? We talked about it some early on, and then we've not talked about it in a while.
No, we haven't watched. I watched the first couple when it first came out. I have not resumed since then.
What about you, Will?
Same exact thing. I watched the first two episodes and haven't watched again. Now, I did see, like, you know, they're bringing back Brent Spiner and Annie O'Donnell. I saw they brought back Marsha Warfield. I think it was at the end of last season. And some other folks that were associated with the show early, you know, the original incarnation of the show. So it did get me interested, but I never went back.
The other angle too, I think Melissa Rauch, some of her co-stars from Big Bang have appeared now on Night Court. So it's all just stunt casting. I think it's probably like, okay, this is a show. It's not huge in the ratings. Who will get you to tune in? And this is one of those things to see Brent Spiner reprise this role. I will tune in for that, even though I haven't found the show to be must watch TV, certainly.
And you're saying you won't be back after that, though, unless they...
That's why they do it, right? It's like, maybe I haven't watched it in 10 episodes and it suddenly got better. Maybe I'll find out when I come back to watch Spiner reprise this role, but I'm guessing it's the same kind of... It'll be too cruel. It's like a vapid situation comedy that just feels so rote.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with it. Yeah. Just way better stuff out there.
So. Yeah, I think when we first talked about it, I said I enjoy it because it was so much like the 80s show. I hadn't realized that my sensibilities had evolved to a point where it, like you're saying, John, it did seem dated and formulaic.
It was amusing to me, but it wasn't enough to take top priority over the other things on my watch list that I'm trying to catch up
on. It's amusing. It'll always be there if I get bored. I don't got to see it. Yeah.
Owl says Waffle House is the best. Oh, is this? the comments are a whole other show.
It is. I love it. I love it.
I was talking about where you would get together and do the bit. You know, I'll take them scattered and smothered and covered. Okay. I mean, it's related.
It is related to Denny's. Yeah. Like, it's spin off from there.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Karen says, I remember watching Night Court, but it was one of those late night syndicated things I would watch after work. I do remember some old guys who sat in the cafeteria diner. I remember that. I haven't watched it since it first came on. It wasn't a show that aired right away. I think probably years later it's in reruns or syndication, or I don't know if it had enough episodes for syndication. It probably did. But, it's probably on Nick at Night or something like that. But I saw it in the 80s till it went off the air, and I've never seen an episode again.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Hey, another 1980s news. Per HuffPost, Robert Downey Jr. dubbed the, quote, villain of the Oscars, end quote. I need a sound.
Feels like a reach, but yeah.
I know. I need a sound bite. I try to find one. Do you know I like to use audio clips from 1980s movies or TV shows when we have our little, you know, what would you call it? I don't know, drops, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
I want one that says, like, you know, this is not news. You know, or something like that. I mean, the closest thing is my, you know.
You gotta be fucking kidding.
I mean, this isn't news. But anyway, this is how the Post reported it. So if you don't know, as we alluded to earlier, the 96th Academy Awards aired last Sunday, March 10th, on ABC. And there were a few connections to 1980s pop culture. Here's one of them. We got a few more, and then we'll get the hell out of here.
Thank goodness.
Robert Downey Jr. is getting backlash on social media for appearing to disrespect Kiwi Kwan at the 96th Academy Awards. Of course, Kiwi Kwan is one of our favorites from the 1980s who played Short Round in the Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom film. And also, he played, speaking of Data, he's played Data in The Goonies. A very different Data, but...
A different Data.
Genius.
Entirely different Data.
He played Brent Spiner, who played the Wheelers. It's a Russian nesting doll of birds. This year, the prestigious ceremony decided to bring back an old tradition by inviting past acting winners to present awards in their respective categories to this year's winners. And since Kwan won the Best Actor in a Supporting Role category last year for his turn in Everything Everywhere All at Once, he presented the award for this category this past ceremony. Well, in a clip, Kwan looks very excited when he announces Downey as the winner. But as Downey walks on stage to receive his award for his appearance in Oppenheimer, he fails to acknowledge Kwan's presence in what HuffPost describes as in any capacity. He literally grabs the trophy out of his hands, does not look at him.
Right.
And proceeds to fist bump and shake hands with other actors that are on the stage there.
Yes.
Before going to the microphone and making his acceptance speech.
This is big news to me because I thought anyone who got within, you know, a couple of feet of Ki-Hai Kwan would want to hug him because to me, he's just so cute. And he gets so excited, as we can see. He's excited about everybody.
Yeah.
No matter who had won, he would have said their name the same way. And he's so excited to do selfies with everyone.
Yeah, I see.
How could Robert Downey Jr. or anyone not want to just hug him? I don't understand.
Kat, have you ever been in that situation? Not winning an Oscar, obviously. Well, maybe you have. I don't know. But like suddenly you're thrust to the center of attention like you weren't expecting it necessarily.
Uh-huh.
Like when it happens to me, when I receive awards and accolades, I will like tunnel vision kicks in and
I get it.
All I can see is like, what am I going to say next? Where do I go? Yeah. Who do I talk to? Now Robert Downey Jr. is more accustomed to the spotlight probably than me a little, but I can imagine, you know, winning an award like that. He might not have been fully self-aware of who he was talking to and looking at. More so he's like, I can't believe I won kind of thing. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I predict within a week, we'll see a BFF selfie of Robert Downey Jr. and Kiwi Kwan saying, we love each other. What are you guys talking about? That's probably coming.
I actually totally agree with you, John, because really, that's what I think. Robert Downey Jr., whether or not he was surprised, he obviously had a little speech prepared. But yeah, I'm sure he got that kind of, whoa. Mm-hmm. I do agree. I can't wait to see this.
And it's
selfie.
RDJ. He might have been a little,
yes.
Actually,
pre-show.
I think he's clean and sober, John. I think he had to be for the last, you know.
Well, but it's the Oscars, man. Special occasion. Yeah. You take a bump every once in a while on special occasions.
Well, John, the BFF selfies have already.
You don't? Oh, it's just me?
I just want to see Cerveza Cristal show up right now.
Oh, yeah. They take a bump of Cerveza Cristal.
Yes.
So the BFF selfies have already been out, John. They came out almost immediately following the award. As soon as the award was given, whoever's on stage, it seems like they go backstage and they immediately take pictures with everybody all together. Oh, so really? There's a group photo there. There's also the, you know, the selfie that Kiwi seems to take of him and everybody.
Yes.
One of them. And then there's also a picture of them, him and Robert Downey Jr. hugging backstage.
Oh, good.
Okay. So there was in these posts, I didn't see any specific reference to the apparent quote unquote snub. Right. But of course you mm-hmm. wouldn't because, you know,
yeah.
the HuffPost right. needs to have a story.
Yes.
I still want credit for the prediction though, because I had not seen the photos yet.
And I guess in HuffPost defense, but you know, to be expected, they write this article because there's folks online that are outraged. They're outraged. God damn it.
In HuffPost defense, they are muckrakers. So
yes, that's true. And that too. So folks on social media posted things like, okay, I'm so glad I'm not the only one who noticed this. I get this is RDJ's moment, but it's Kiwi's too. He was the most ignored person of the five up there. Is it his moment?
Nope.
His moment was last year, I think. And I love the guy. Yep, don't get me wrong.
I don't think it's his moment. No.
No.
Another wrote, it's telling when you see how actors interact in situations like these. In this instance, I feel like RDJ is the type of person that'd be rude to waiters.
Because he wasn't fully aware and greeted everyone on his way to receive a career-topping award. Right. Yeah, certainly. Wait,
a shell-shocking moment.
Are they suggesting they thought maybe that Kiwi was just like the guy who hands out the awards? I mean, he did just see him make the announcement. He's a famous kid.
Yeah. Can you get me a water? Yeah, thanks. Here's, I got my trophy.
He hands him an empty glass.
He's like, you're not a waiter.
Anyway, many of Downey's, just like John, many of Downey's fans stuck up for the actor on social media saying he appeared, quote, flustered and overwhelmed. Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
I actually think that was it.
When I get my Oscar, I might also snub someone. It's not intentional. So just say it now.
Well, if I'm handing it to you, you're not getting away without a hug. So.
Right. Can you believe John snubbed Kat at the podcast awards? Inconceivable.
Snub George. Snub George.
Is that a hashtag?
Hashtag snub George. let's see. Karen says, the first thing I remember seeing Downey in was Chances Are with Sybil Shepherd. I saw it with a friend from school, her mom and her mom's friend, and her mom made us cover our eyes when Sybil and Robert were in their undies. Oh, we just posted that picture on our Facebook page a few days ago.
Oh,
Karen, you should check.
Yeah. I covered my eyes too. Yeah.
Hey, another 1980s news, and as reported by Entertainment Weekly, former Batman villains reunite. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito appeared at the Academy Awards to present the award for visual effects and film editing. But before they did, DeVito took a moment to acknowledge the, quote, very obvious connection that viewers likely picked up on between him and Schwarzenegger. While most would assume that what tied the pair together was twins, Ivan Reitman helmed a comedy from 1988, there was another unifying theme. They both tried to kill Batman, which Schwarzenegger points out. Mm-hmm. A very blue Schwarzenegger played the evil Mr. Freeze in 1997. 1997's Batman and Robin. While DeVito went toe-to-toe with Keaton's Batman as the Penguin in Tim Burton's Batman Returns. And that's our Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's our Batman. Mm-hmm. Yep.
DeVito asked Schwarzenegger, how did Batman beat you? Schwarzenegger explains that George Clooney's iteration of the crime fighter used his, quote, one weakness against him, love. Wait a second. What am I missing here?
You know, John doesn't like the touchy-feely parts of
love as a plot twist, as a device in movies. Like,
I thought he was being orgasmic, maybe.
Oh, what?
So I say love.
Wait,
like,
okay. So keep that in your head, and I go, and that's what you think my O face is?
I hope to never find out. But
well, our OnlyFans spun up, we'll all discover.
We'll talk about that later. Yeah.
Ooh. Yes, I know.
Just a little teaser.
Don't tease me.
DeVito retorts that his character was thrown out of a window. That's how Batman killed him. The camera then cuts to a stone-faced Michael Keaton, who's sitting right down in front in the crowd.
Yep.
It's like he wasn't having it.
As laughter rings out throughout the Dolby Theater. and he's just so perfect, Keaton, right? I mean, look, we saw him in that disappointing Flash film, which had a lot of potential and just didn't rise up to meet it. But he was he wasn't one of the bad things to me that bothered me, except for his wig, which was really awful. But other than that, he was, he just, you know, he was perfect, I think. And I did. Okay. I did read recently that he had mentioned that when he was when he went back into the costume, assumed the cowl again to play the character, he said it just felt like, you know, just like Brent Spiner and Annie O'Donnell talking about. It just felt like it was yesterday, natural.
Now, here's an interesting point of order that I read just the other day when I was going down a rabbit hole about Coyote versus Acme and Warner Brothers and the Catwoman film that was canceled. And I read in an article that he actually reprised his role as Batman in that Catwoman film that got shelved. That, prior to the Flash.
Yeah, the Batgirl film, right.
Yeah. What did I say? Catwoman? Batgirl? Yeah, whatever. Batgirl. Yeah.
Okay.
Some peripheral Batman character that's not Batman, right? Robin, Joker, whoever. Right. Yeah. The other movie, the WB. So I'm like, what? There's another reason that it should see the light of day because we get more Keaton Batman. And yet,
Yep. And they were setting up that he was going to have another film as Batman where he was going to play an older mentor to our newer Batman, you know, character.
Yeah.
Bat Boy.
Yeah, or whatever. One member of the Bat family. Yeah. I know. It just sucks.
It's probably Dick Grayson. Because doesn't he become Batman at some? I don't know all the comic book mythology. It makes sense, probably.
No, Batman is Batman. Everybody else is somebody else. Yep. They're Robins that then become somebody else, like Nightwing. But I'm sure Batman's always Bruce Wayne. Right. Batman's always Bruce Wayne, is what I meant to say. He's got a rotating cast of Robins that become other characters, maybe. Yeah, but...
Nightwing, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Well, somebody liked when Michael Keaton in the audience was, Karen says, he's like, come at me, guys. He's doing a little gesture.
he's kind of like, bring it. Yeah.
Yes.
I think he was trying not to laugh. I watched the clip and he.
I don't think you could make him break. He's a consummate professional.
But it looked, there was a little hint of something at the corner of his mouth.
I don't think so at all. That's Batman. Oh. It's Batman. You know what it is? I think really what it is he's got a secret that he knows he's going to kick your ass. And that you're going to fall for his little, come on, I can do it. I think that's what it is, Kat. Yeah, not that he was going to break. Because he does a similar smirk in the film. So he does that same thing.
Okay. All right. So it was full on Batman.
Yeah, he was
he channeled his inner Bruce Wayne.
All right.
I think he looks great too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, what else do we want to talk about? Let's talk about this.
What's this?
You know we can't see the paper, right?
We can hear the paper.
I really have one sheet. I'm just keep moving around.
Let's do this.
Hey, also, this week in 1980s news, as reported by Deadline, Kevin Costner responds to John Mulaney's Field of Dreams bit. If you're not familiar, comedian John Mulaney had some fun at the Oscars with the Field of Dreams, as he introduced the award for Best Sound. Mm-hmm. In just under 2 minutes, Mulaney walked the audience through a tongue-in-cheek version of the film's plot, which
it's cute.
When you hear it without the benefit of actually seeing the film, it makes it sound like a movie pitch that would not have been greenlit. I mean, it sounds bonkers. And if you hadn't seen it, I do have the clip here I could play for our folks watching.
You know, for years, movies didn't have sound, and then they figured it out. Some people say that the silent era was the golden era of film. These people are difficult and insane. Without sound, we wouldn't have been able to hear such classic lines as, you're gonna need a bigger boat, I'll have what she's having. And he was in the Amazon with my mother when she was researching spiders just before she died. Or what about that moment in Field of Dreams when we hear, if you build it, he will come. And then Costner does it. He builds a baseball field. Well, I guess he doesn't build it. He mows down corn, and then there is a field. And then he's like, I'm going to watch Ghost play baseball. And the bank is like, you want to pay your mortgage? And he's like, nah, I'm going to watch Ghost play baseball. And then he finds James Earl Jones, who wrote The Boat Rocker, which I thought was a real book deep into my 20s. And he's like, people will come, Ray. He's the only one with a financial plan. But what's weird is Timothy Busfield pushes little Gabby Hoffman off the bleachers, and she falls down, and she's unconscious. Then Burt Lancaster is Moonlight Graham, and he comes up and he pats her on the back a couple times, and he's like, hot dog stuck in a throat. And then he can't go back in the game, because I guess there's a rule in ghost baseball that if you leave the field at any point to become an elderly ghost and do the Heimlich maneuver, you can't return to the field. I love Field of Dreams. That should win Best Picture, though they'll probably go with one of this year's.
Are you guys familiar with the movie?
I saw it a long time ago, just one time. Yeah.
Enough to know that's funny.
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
What about you, Will? You've seen it, right?
Oh, it's one of my favorite movies. Yeah, I love Field of Dreams.
Is it? Oh, cool. All right. Do you agree with his summary?
Well, I do, except again, it makes it sound hilarious and ridiculous. And the movie is fucking bonkers. And quite honestly, I I'm a big fan of the film, but when he was, when I heard that summary on Sunday, I was like, wait a second.
Does all that stuff happen?
I couldn't remember how Burt Lancaster's character got in the field. Like how he was, I remember him being the doctor and all. Anyway, and it's crazy how that happens. I mean, the movie is a complete fantasy, you know, it's this weird mixture of fantasy that involves sports and time travel and ghosts.
Mm-hmm. And perfect.
It makes its own rules as it goes along and somehow it works. It was actually based on a 1982 novel by W.P. Kinsella called A Shoeless Joe. Of course, the film, as everybody knows, I believe, starred Kevin Costner, who was told by some voice that if he builds it, he will come in a cornfield where he's about to lose because he can no longer afford the mortgage on his land. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately ghosts of baseball legends show up in this field once he, you know, plows the corn.
As they do.
James Earl Jones in it, Emmy Madigan, Timothy Busfield, Burt Lancaster, as you mentioned, are also in it. It was nominated for 3 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Original Score, and Best Adapted Screenplay. Anyway, it's I love that movie. I think it's a hilarious way of summarizing it, but yeah.
This made me want to watch it again so I could appreciate it more.
Yeah, I can't, look, whenever I see it, I get chills. I mean, like these moments he's describing, as silly as they are, I will watch it after having seen his way of telling the story, and it will still give me chills. I mean, even that moment he described with the hot dog and all that, it sounds ridiculous. I know, but it's hot. Well, I mean,
his description is factual. He's just putting it in a odd framing is what he's doing to make it sound as ridiculous. It makes it sound as ridiculous as it is to an outside observer not knowing the context. So that's why it's funny.
It is. It does make me want to watch it again.
I mean, it's so great. It's one of those movies where, and I want to do... There's some episodes I want to do with regard to some pop culture phenomenon in the 1980s, like ghost movies, just generally, and not ghost horror films, but the other ones, like this one, or like rom-coms that feature ghosts, where people are falling in love with ghosts, or deceased love comes back as a ghost,
right?
Yes,
any sort of sexy pottery film will do.
Yes, but it occurs to me, and this film I think fits into that category, is these ghost movies, much like time travel films, are about trying to recapture a moment, trying to redo a wrong or a right a wrong rather, and that's what this film is. You know, where Kevin Costner is estranged from his father, and then his father passes away, I think. And so this whole film is really about him fixing that. He doesn't know that till the very end, you know. But in that same way, these other characters that are involved have similar kind of little arcs, you know, including the Burt Lancaster character, which it's a really touching moment when he changes into the doctor again. I don't want to spoil it for you if you haven't seen it, but it's really moving because part of it also is about knowing that you may have a dream to pursue, but sometimes you may change course, and that's better, you know?
But you sometimes don't know it till after you make the adjustment and see what it brings.
Right. Yeah. So there's all these fantastic messages there. After the awards last Sunday, Kevin Costner took to the social media account of his band. I didn't realize he had a band.
Yeah.
His band, Kevin Costner and Modern West, where he retweeted a video of Mulaney's bit that I just played you, and he wrote, quote, "Not a bad summary." With a smiley or a laughing emoji.
Yeah. Good.
In 2021, Costner took part in the Field of Dreams Major League Baseball game in Iowa, which was set in a special purpose stadium built near the original movie set. At a pregame conference, Costner admitted still felt an emotional connection with the film, saying, quote, "I'm moved by it. Somewhere along the line, if you have some unfinished business, that movie starts to take over." Yeah, again, it's that, oof. Chills just thinking about that.
Wow.
What's really neat is after the, so when they filmed this back in the 1980s, to have the baseball field in this cornfield, the movie producers had a spot they wanted, they picked out. And it was perfect, they thought, because there were no buildings that would get in the way from the sun. So they had a clear line of sight from the sun, which would make perfect, you know, for their shooting. But it turns out that the area of the cornfield they wanted actually fell on a property line. So there's two different people that own that land. So they cut a deal with these two different families to be able to build this baseball field and a barn and a house all for the purposes of the film. When the movie was over, the families left them there for the most part. One of the families eventually, after a few years, knocked their, you know, did away with what part of the set was on their land. But they did restore it a few years later. And then in 2007, that owner sold her portion to the other family, now finally putting it in the hands of one. In October of 2011, it changed hands once again, now being owned by a private partnership called Go the Distance, which, if you're familiar with the film, is one of the phrases that the voice tells Kevin Costner and James Earl Jones' character. Okay. And they have maintained it the way it was ever since, holding special events there. In fact, they have occasion have a ghost baseball player, a ghost baseball team play there for, you know, audience to watch.
That's so cool. And
under the new ownership, as of 2011, visitor traffic increased from 65,000 to 100,000 visitors per year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a book that came out in 2002 where they chronicle how this make-believe location, which, you know, saves this family in this film because of the unusual way they repurpose a cornfield, actually turned into a real and tangible place that, you know, has provided, fulfilled some sort of wishes, provide some sort of wish fulfillment for, you know, hundreds of thousands of people now. And an income for this, you know, now for this company, but prior for the families that own the land.
Yeah.
Literally, it was built and people continue to come. I mean, that's the thing with it. Although I'm curious, how do they get ghosts to come and play? Is that a special arrangement they have?
What are this called? A Ouija board's involved?
Kind of just a seance. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes
sense. Hey, there's a question in the comments. Is it he will come or they will come? I was questioning that too
Most
myself.
People think it's they, but it is in fact he, because spoiler alert, the voice is telling Kevin Costner that if he follows the instructions, his father will come.
It's his daddy.
Yes. Not the team. His father. Yeah. Yes. As John points out. Because as I alluded to earlier, he has some unfinished business with his father that he needs to resolve. And they do resolve it by playing a game of catch.
Aww.
Yes. How nice of his dad to make him do all that manual labor in order just to have some resolution. I could just come and talk with you, but first tear down a bunch of corn and then we'll talk.
Well, you know, that alludes to another one of the mysteries of the, and they or he is not a mystery. If you watch the movie, it says he. Who is the voice saying that? And it's, you know, because it's not the father. It's not Shoeless Joe. We don't actually know. We're never told. And in fact, there's still a secret maintained as to what actor provided the voice.
I see.
The author of the book says he was told that Ed Harris provided the voice. But that's never been confirmed. And other folks had different theories, including maybe Ray Liotta, who plays Shoeless Joe, or Kevin Costner, who's the star of the film. But those aren't true or right.
Oh.
All right.
You never know.
Anyway, there you go. It's he. Look it up, Trollbot, in the comments. You're on a computer, right? Go to Google. It's not my job. Let's see what folks say. Troll says it's the Mandela effect.
Maybe it is.
Al says great baseball flick. Darth says, hey, do you guys hear X-Men 97 showrunner was fired by Disney? I did. It's quite a shakeup there. The X-Men 97 animated series is coming to Disney. It's sort of picking up where the old X-Men show left off when it got canned.
Oh, the animated one?
But the showrunner, whoever. What's that?
The animated one? Yeah. I see. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With that classic theme. Yeah, the theme song. Yeah, they had high hopes for this showrunner that they brought on, only to fire him just the other day. Karen says, then that reminded me of Dirty Dancing. What reminded you of Dirty Dancing?
Oh, Patrick Swayze, because we were talking about, you referenced Ghosts.
Oh, I did.
Sexy Pottery.
Yes, I did say that, right.
Yep, made Karen think of Swayze. And
gotcha, which led Karen to be reminded that Eric Carmen just passed, singer of Hungry Eyes, and was a member of the, what group was he with before that? Was he the Raspberries?
I don't know.
Ask Trollbot.
I'll use Google.
use Google, cat. Come on. Will was just jumping on the viewers. You too.
he was the lead singer for a band called the Raspberries. And finally, in 1980s news, as reported by Entertainment Weekly, Christopher Nolan's son told him that, quote, young people aren't concerned about nukes. Mm. With over $960 million in box office returns, Oppenheimer was the third highest grossing film of 2023. And it's the highest grossing biopic ever made.
Wow.
Is that a fair thing? I guess so. It's, right? There's no reason to say that it's not, it can't be compared with other biopics, you know, whether it's Queen, Elton John. I'm trying to think of other ones that recently came out.
I would argue this is not quite a biopic. It focuses heavily on Oppenheimer, but it's about the entire situation. But they can call it what they want. Mm-hmm. Whatever category helps them tick a box, that's okay.
You're right. Would they consider Lincoln, Spielberg's Lincoln, a biopic?
Right. Because someone historical is in it does not make it a biopic necessarily, but okay, you know, he's the director. He knows what he intended. So I'll let him have this one.
Yeah, and I don't know that Nolan's necessarily touting this, but Entertainment Weekly is.
Muckrakers.
Anyway, for folks who don't know, it tells the story of J. Robert Oppenheimer, played by Cillian Murphy, from his days as a university student to his role in developing the atomic bomb with the Manhattan Project to the 1954 security hearing that effectively ended his career. And I will never watch it.
Oh, no?
You mean
no.
You'll never watch it again or you'll never watch it?
Never watch it a first time.
Hmm.
Is it too depressing?
Yes.
Anxiety producing?
Yes, all those things, Kat, for something I want to talk about. But I guess before we get there,
after
accepting the award for Best Picture and Best Director, Oppenheimer, writer-director Christopher Nolan, told the press that his kids weren't all that impressed with the subject matter of the award-winning film, and he realized that making a movie about the issue might be able to move the needle. Quote, "It was very striking to me when I first got involved on the project. I told one of my teenage sons what I was working on, and he actually said to me, well, young people aren't that concerned about nuclear weapons." While Nolan clarified that he purposely never makes a film to send a particular message to audiences, he did express his hopes that he may be able to help younger generations understand the threat of nuclear annihilation.
And this film is not going to help raise any kind of awareness about it. So not having seen it.
Okay.
Spoiler alert. So a nuclear bomb goes off in Japan. So it's a thing that happens in the film.
Yes.
But it's the Star Wars The Phantom Menace of the nuclear bombs going off. Because it's like it all takes place in the Senate. You don't see the action. You don't see a bomb happening. You don't see any kind of devastation. You hear about it. You hear people talk about it. You hear hearings about it. But this film is the political side of that story. And that's not going to get... Look, I learned about nuclear war by watching The Day After in prime time.
Exactly.
And I'm like, that's terrifying. Yeah. Now I know what can happen if a nuclear bomb goes off. And this film doesn't really tell you. It tells you you'll be in trouble with Congress, but it doesn't tell you what kind of devastation it provides other than inferring it from the goings on during the Senate chambers. Young Skywalker, it's not the action, it's just the political end of it. So Oppenheimer's not going to help make anybody more aware of a nuclear threat.
Yeah, I haven't seen it and it doesn't sound very compelling.
Karen agrees with me and says also it's too long at 3 hours. Owl says, "I enjoyed it, but it could have been shorter by 90 minutes." That's like a third of it, right? Or half of it. Yeah.
To give you an example, Will and Kat, I will tell you that I want to say the bomb actually drops on Hiroshima and Nagasaki at about the middle of the movie, if that gives you any kind of idea as to what the movie's structure is.
Huh. How do you know so much about it if you haven't seen it?
No, I have. You're the one that hasn't seen it.
Oh, I thought you said you haven't seen
it. No, I have seen it. Have seen it.
Oh.
Right.
I thought he said that too, Will, but I think he was referencing you like, okay, you not having seen it. Yeah. And
you
then
not
he
having
was giving
seen, right.
us details.
Yes.
It took me a minute.
So imagine there's another 90 minutes of what happens after the bomb drops that all happens in, you know, people's offices and, oh, we're in big trouble and you're being interrogated. And it's not the kind of thing that's going to make young people go, ooh. They're going to fall asleep.
And Marcus writes, young people are stupid.
Nope. Well,
by nature. That's me too. I was when I was stupid.
Miss O says, still haven't seen Oppenheimer, but have loved all of Nolan's stuff so far.
Me too.
Okay.
Marcus also writes, it wasn't Midsommar bad. I want to see that. I heard that's
a pretty good movie.
What's Midsommar?
It's got a lot of depth to it.
I don't know what that is.
But it was a miserable hour and a half, and then there were 2 hours left.
There you go.
So yeah, yep, I don't want to see it for, yes. It was not going to be anxiety inducing because, you know, I'm old enough now that I have, and I'm on medication that I you know, I won't get so anxious about these things.
Right.
But
right.
That said.
Will took a little bump before the show. We're going to get up and a bump.
Yeah.
It's not good stuff.
But that said, I may add that audio in now, Kat, your suggestion. That sounds like a good one for the audio podcast. But that said, yeah, nuclear annihilation was one of the big threats looming over our head in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And I started making a list. And I want to see if you guys can help me add to this list, okay? These are all the things that I could think of that we were told were going to kill us in the 1980s.
Okay.
Some of these things we've talked about on this show.
Sure.
No doubt.
Nuclear war.
Yep.
Like we just mentioned. Tylenol.
Oh,
you know, that large you could say, Halloween candy. That just goes, you know.
We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. AIDS.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially when they didn't know how it's transmitted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Terrifying.
Well, you're talking about the disease, not the diet candy. It's two different things. Although that could kill you too.
Either.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there was a warning on there.
It's a warning. Might give you the other kind of AIDS. We don't know what alcohol, we don't know what causes it yet.
AIDS may give you AIDS. You're like, great. That's why I'm buying it. Why do they spell it two different ways?
Really confusing.
Kidnappers.
No, yeah. Stranger danger.
That you'd be abducted by a kidnapper.
Yep.
Aliens. That would be abducted by aliens.
Oh.
Yep.
I could only hope.
He's still waiting on that.
He's waiting for the probe.
Why doesn't anybody love me?
It's not the probe specifically. It's the aliens in general. If the probe's required, okay.
That t-shirt you were wearing.
It's not the thing.
Okay. Not the t-shirt with the arrow on it. Okay.
That's not the motivation.
The final one I have here.
Probe stupid.
The final one I have here is demons, as in, you know, possession mostly, or someone else being possessed.
Yeah.
That's the other thing we're told to go.
There was the D&D scare around there and the demons that associated with that. So any kind of Satanism, sure.
That's true.
Right.
You're right. Add heavy metal music and role-playing games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Marcus says Arnold from the future.
Yes.
Oh, and cults. Yeah. Cults. That's a good one too. Yeah.
Cults? Oops. Horses?
Yeah. Cults. Not cults.
Cults. Cults.
Not
Seaver.
Little horses. No cults? Little, no baby horses.
Colt Seaver.
Oh, Colts. Got it. I'm like, who's Colt Seaver? What are you talking about?
That's the fall guy.
No, that's Colt.
Colt Seaver.
Colts.
What are you saying?
Colts, you're saying, Colts. Not Colts.
Yes, okay. Colt, yes. Oh, I just thought of another one.
Colts are
I just thought
me.
Of
Here
another one. That we should, another thing we should fear in the air. Salt. Salt?
Salt?
Why salt? What?
That was a whole big thing that came out would give you high blood pressure and kill you.
Oh. Well,
and there's the seesaw.
Yeah.
First, eggs were bad and good and then bad again. So eggs for a time. Lots of foods.
I wrote
lots
of foods too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bacon. Any kind of food.
All right. So we got
every food's bad.
Like a dozen things so far. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody cares if bacon's bad for you because bacon.
Yeah. Right. Because the Colts love it.
And this got me thinking. So this whole thing. All right. We're moving on. John is literally beating a dead horse. Or maybe not literally, but figuratively beating a dead horse. Dead Colt. You know, this got me wondering though, right? Because it's not that the world has necessarily fewer nuclear weapons than it did during the 1980s. Although it may. But it probably does.
Wait. Let me just say, we have enough.
We have enough. We've always had plenty.
It could be fewer than we had at the time, but there's plenty.
Yes.
To go around.
More than enough.
What was the statistic in the 1980s was between us and Russia, we could kill the world over like three times, I think.
Yeah, over and over and over.
Yeah, many.
We have plenty.
It's like hitting 30 seconds on the microwave when the one goes out. Psh, just do it again. Boop.
Yeah. When it's down to one, boop, 31. Yeah. I don't want you to beep. Yeah. Boop. Yeah.
Another launch of ICBMs. But if you guys recall as well, because I remember this in the 1980s, and maybe it's not marketed successfully enough today, is the doomsday clock.
Hmm.
So if you don't know, the doomsday clock was actually founded in 1945 by Albert Einstein and Robert Oppenheimer. Mm-hmm. And the other folks who helped develop the first atomic weapons in the Manhattan Project. That's, you know, part of the subject of the Oppenheimer film.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was fully a third of the movie. You should have watched it.
I'm never going to watch that. I'd no sooner watch The Day After again, like you said.
Mm-hmm. I've watched that. It's hard. It's hard to watch because it's an 80s thing with pacing, but it's still cool to watch remembering it. Yeah.
Oh, no. the Bulletin. So along with this doomsday clock, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. I'm saying, but whatever. No, so,
I love when he does that.
Just devolved into mumbling.
This is a long ass sentence with too many commas. I'll just read it literally here. Founded in 1945 by Albert Einstein, J. Robert Oppenheimer, and University of Chicago scientists who helped develop the first atomic weapons in the Manhattan Project, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists created the Doomsday Clock 2 years later using the imagery of apocalypse, midnight, and the contemporary idiom of nuclear explosion, countdown to zero, to convey threats to humanity and the planet. Mm-hmm. Now, it turns out that the doomsday clock is set every year by the Bulletin's Science and Security Board in consultation with the board of sponsors, which includes 9 Nobel laureates. So a bunch of smart people. Mm-hmm. And it's this clock that's been, you know, at least for a time, I don't know that people are so aware of it anymore, but it's a universally recognized symbol of the world's vulnerability to catastrophe, global catastrophe. At the hands of human beings.
Of us, right. They're,
yeah, us.
Right, not yeah. So, an asteroid. We're talking about self-imposed.
Yeah.
So the closest we were, so again, the closer you are to midnight, the closer we are to global destruction. In the 1980s, the closest we ever were to midnight was at 3 minutes to midnight.
Mm. Wow.
And this was...
That's a great name for a band, by the way. 3 minutes to midnight.
This was following further escalations between the U.S. And the Soviet Union during the ongoing Soviet-Afghan War. It was following this period of time, or during this period of time, that that Reagan became determined to win the Cold War. Mm-hmm. You know, and part of that was showing your might in the form of nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. The farthest we've been... since the inception of the doomsday clock is in 1991, when we were 17 minutes from midnight, and that was at a time where the United States and the Soviet Union had signed the first strategic arms reduction treaty, and the Soviet Union had dissolved shortly thereafter.
So how far back does the clock go? Do you know? Is it a day, or is it like all year? Or like, how close to the ragged edge are we? Does it start at 12:01 in the morning and then ends at midnight? Or you know what I mean? Because 3 minutes didn't sound bad when it was an hour. It's an hour. Okay, good. Whew. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's an hour.
Okay.
But if it's 3 minutes at the end of a year, you're like, oh crap, we're super close.
And the furthest away from midnight was only 17 minutes away.
Yeah, those were the heydays. We're like, happy days are here again. Yeah. I'll watch a movie about Oppenheimer. That's how I was in 1991.
They missed their window for Will.
Okay, so 3 minutes was the closest in the 80s, 17 minutes the farthest away. Aren't you wondering where we are today? While citing the deteriorating state of the world, the board set the clock. Because I was thinking, look, maybe this is why kids don't know. Either they don't know the clock, or the clock is 30 minutes to midnight. And we're like,
Who cares?
It's fine. No, the reality is there's not enough TikTok videos about this. That's what this is. So citing the deteriorating state of the world, the board set the clock at 2 minutes to midnight in 2019.
Wow.
And at 100 seconds to midnight in 2022.
Wow.
In 2023, the board expressed, quote unquote, heightened concerns and moved the clock to 90 seconds to midnight.
Jesus, you just heightened my concerns. Jesus,
you're
really?
You're freaking me out.
90 seconds?
The closest to global catastrophe it's ever been. And they cited in part, they said it's not the entirety of this because part of it is climate issues and stuff along those lines. But in large part, it was because of Russia's threats of using nuclear weapons with their war against Ukraine and most recently against others. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, this year, they just did it in January, just a couple of months ago. They set the doomsday clock again at 90 seconds, not because they said things are stable, but because we continue to face an unprecedented level of danger.
Mm. It's cheerful.
Now, they do say, hey, folks, you know, you may feel scared, uncomfortable, concerned. The good news is you can do something about this. The world can do something about this. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. Me as one individual, and I know as collectively, you know, maybe we have some political power, but as one individual, I don't feel like I can do anything. Like if there were a million of us, we couldn't do anything. Well, I'm very cynical and I won't get political on this show about it, but.
Right. All I know is I suddenly am far more anxious than I ever was in the 80s.
Yeah. I felt super cool about living in the 2020s until you said that. Well, it's way better now. Certainly it's way better. People know, oh no, it's way worse.
Miss So says, getting closer to midnight every year. Karen says, surprisingly, we weren't more worried about guns. You mean in the 1980s or you mean now? I would say, just based on what I read from this board, is, you know, we're talking about global catastrophes. We have a big issue with guns in our country here in the United States that other countries don't face, but it's not a global concern. So that might be that.
80s, she says, in the 1980s.
Do you think, part of it's probably awareness. Like, I was not aware of the information you just shared. And then there's kind of like, like the name of it sounds very 80s. The Doomsday Clock. It sounds like there's a picture at the, you know, the DC Hall of Villains headquarters with a picture of Justice League above it. Yes. And they're like, any moment now, we'll destroy the Hall of Justice. There's something, you know, goofy going on. You know, it isn't like, how urgent is it? It's the Doomsday Clock. It sounds like, you know, a bit on Pee Wee's Playhouse.
DC just did a, DC did a comic book run a few years ago, Doomsday Clock.
Did they? Well, coincidentally.
About 5 years ago.
Now, was it related to the nuclear threat thing? Or
I don't recall. It was really weird because it got to a point where it was a crossover with characters from the Watchmen world. And
like the blue naked guy?
So it may have been. yes, yeah, he's part of it. Mr. Manhattan, or Dr. Manhattan. But what happened, it was weird. It was supposed to come out like with one issue every month, and then the story was going to conclude after like 12 months. Well, they did like three or four or five of them, and then they started taking longer to come out and longer and longer. And at some point, I was like, I'm not reading. I lost interest. I stopped buying them, so I don't know what happened.
I was hoping you were about to say, and then they ended it abruptly, just like if nuclear war had happened. That would have been cool.
Yeah, because that, and that's uplifting,
Hey.
Story's over. See what you did to yourself. Yeah.
So Nick said something, but I'm... hard time catching up with what he was talking about. Nick says, did the
Doomsday Doomsday Clock before you did? And then he says,
oh, is that right? Yep. Oh, there you go, Nick. Yep. We're simpatico, as they say here. Darth also says, hey, well, Star Trek is going to Warner Brothers. Is that right? I can't imagine. Now, I happen to know, you hear stories, Warner Brothers might be looking for a new owner. And it seems some folks think that their strategy of shelving stuff, films before they're, instead of and writing them off for taxes, instead of actually putting them out there, maybe trying to make the company as lean as possible and attractive as possible to a buyer. So I would think if anybody in that structure, Paramount might buy Warner Brothers, but I don't know that's Paramount. The only, that's got to be one of their biggest money getters, right? Consistently, Star Trek. That's the cash cow.
Why would they sell it?
Name another CBS franchise still going on. For 50 years.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the amount of spinoffs they have on the air right now alone, I think, are testimony.
And they have more coming in production currently. They're not, Paramount is, they're dialing back, but they're not dialing to zero. You know what I mean? They're dialing back, but keeping their breadwinners up front.
Yeah. I mean, sadly, ultimately, you know, one company's going to own all of these things, and it's going to mean more prices, higher prices, and less choice, less competition for, you know.
A doomsday clock for that.
Oh, I mean, we're down, I think we're down to three, right? We're down to three companies that own every media in the in the world. And in the 80s, it was dozens and dozens and hundreds.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. That's also depressing. All right, so on that note, hey, that was our show. Go hug your family. Tell someone you love them.
That was the last news item.
Tell somebody you love them. Well, hey, we've got some funny comments here that we could talk about after we say our thank yous. Okay. Kat, right?
Yeah.
Oh, after we say our thank yous. Are you not going to play the closing music?
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Kat. Music? I forgot about that. That no was problem. 1980s news. I wish I had the sound of somebody weeping.
Well, I was just going to say I feel better now after the music. Oh. And you just, you know, and then you were weeping. Oh, thank you. Okay.
Much better. This one here.
I don't like everything the way it is now compared to the way it used to be.
That's pretty nice.
90 seconds left on the clock.
Hey, once again, I want to say thanks to our today's sponsor, Kokomo Toys. They're the largest toy store in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Right? And not blowing smoke. You can go there, check it out. It's about 5,000 square feet of toys from the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, the era in which we grew up. And they have current stuff too. It's family owned and operated. They got a brick and mortar location, but they also have an online store too. So you can go there and visit them in Kokomo, Indiana, or you can go to KokomoToys.com to find out how you can get your hands on the next, on your next collectible.
Karen Fleeger thinks we should have a Wilhelm scream.
Oh yeah. I
don't have that on in every show.
Yeah. That would be
in every show we should.
Yeah.
And speaking of Karen Fleeger, our show is brought to you thanks in part to our early adopters, Rick Parker and Karen Fleeger.
There we are.
Thank you. That's right, Glenn, because we liked it. We loved it. Glenn gets it.
And, thank you especially to our Secret of Our Success Level Patreon supporters, Matt Marino, John Henderson, Brandon Greer, Marcus Taylor, Tony Great, Nick Guillory, and Craig Coletta.
Thank you so much, guys.
Yes.
Oh, Miss So and Glenn are both offering hugs. Hugs to you guys as well.
Aww.
Feel better because of that.
Hugs back. Hugs, hugs.
That is good.
Thank you.
We love you guys.
We are so grateful for your hugs. We do appreciate cash too. That would be great. And so we're grateful for all those folks that we just mentioned that help us keep the lights on every week and produce the show. Whether you think it doesn't look like it costs any money, there's costs involved.
Embrace us with cash. We love hugs.
Yeah, there you go. So if you can help us, please, you can, if you want to give us money, just go to patreon.com/1980s now. You can find out ways. There's plenty of free ways to support us too, including just sending us an email or a post on Facebook, following us on YouTube. Any of those things help. Seriously. It's kind of funny, right? Like, I mean, look, our Facebook, for some reason, is now blowing up in the last 30 days. But when I go out to publicists and say, hey, I would love to talk to your, you know, someone that you represent, and they say, well, how many subscribers do you have? So those kinds of things help. Anyway, hey, just leave a comment or send us a note like ones we've got here. This one is from Terrence. Terrence writes, very impressed by the podcast. Given that this is a show about 80s nostalgia, may I suggest adding a fourth talking head?
Ooh.
But it must be a puppet. Ratings through the roof. Oh, Kat, that reminds me. Wait, I gotta get it.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait to see.
I still have my Will puppet.
Yes.
From several episodes ago.
Oh my gosh.
There's a John puppet too.
I need a puppet.
Kat always has something nearby.
I have a pocket ninja nearby.
There you go.
That'll do.
All right. Yeah. So that's a good idea. We should.
Okay.
Let's have an all puppet show.
Later. Bye, Kat.
Yes.
See ya.
Aside for now.
Bye, Gobo.
Marcus says, John isn't going to be able to stand up for an hour. Because John loves puppets.
They were no longer.
It does. It's true. Right. Puppets make me go, blah. Per will.
You know, you got to make puppets for all of us here. Yes. And we also got a note here, and I'll be quite honest with you. I didn't respond back to this person. I don't know if this is a joke or if this is a automated email that they're soliciting for.
Oh boy.
But this is what they wrote.
Take a drink.
I'll say this is from KD. So there you go. They wrote, do you guys have an OnlyFans? Your chemistry on the podcast would be great on the format. Love.
So like, now, is that a thing? Do people do OnlyFans as a group?
John, are you kidding me?
Thank you.
No, I'm not kidding you. John. I don't subscribe to very many OnlyFans pages, so I don't know, really.
Yes. I've never paid for OnlyFans either.
Paid.
Well, you have to pay. I keep trying to watch stuff, but you have to give them a credit card. But I'm assuming anything you could imagine is on there.
Podcasts? Welcome to episode 5 of the podcast. I mean, what's going on with the podcast? I don't understand.
What could we possibly do?
Kat, don't ask that question, Kat. Don't ask that question.
Yeah, Kat. OnlyFans is primarily associated with adult things.
Not only.
To see.
I understand.
But you're right. OnlyFans a couple of years ago started something is called like OFTV, which is for non-adult things, and it could be anything. They have yoga instructors on there, cooking shows, that sort of thing.
Hot.
So it may very well be that they were suggesting that you'd be willing to pay it to see us, on OnlyFans because that's how much they enjoy the audio podcast. Yeah. So if you're listening, KD, you could see us for free on Facebook or YouTube where we're streaming right now.
But if we do create an OnlyFans, we'll announce it right here.
And is it, maybe this is an opportunity for the cash that Will was talking about.
Wait, what?
Can we get some cash from this?
Wait, certainly.
From subscribers.
I just want to say, Kat.
Yes.
If at any point in the next 2 minutes, Will says, it's time to play, I'm turning off my camera.
What would the thing that we need playing?
I don't know. Concerned with? That's why I'm concerned.
I will also be concerned because you tend to have a logical approach to things, John. So
Will, he sets up this email, wonderful email from KD. We talk about it a little bit as well. It's funny that you bring that up because, and then here we are
once again
with our pants off on the podcast suddenly. I don't know what it is. That's why.
Pants aren't going to matter. I can't see your pants. I could take my pants off right now and it's not going to make a difference, right?
That's true.
You could have on gum pants and we wear
gum pants.
Hey, before we completely wrap up here, we're going to give away a retro collectible from our friends, the fine folks over at Kokomo Toys and Collectibles, located in Kokomo, Indiana. But hey, the great news for you is no matter where you are in the world, you can shop there. Go to KokomoToys.com to find out just how.
All right.
If you can pay them a visit, you should definitely do that. That place is giant and packed full of toys. All right, hey, folks that are with us right now live.
You put
hashtag Kokomo. Hashtag Kokomo. Hashtag Kokomo. I can't get a word in with you guys this week. Hashtag Kokomo.
You're the one that brought up OnlyFans? What do you expect?
I know, but then I move on. Follow, come with me to the rest of the show.
Oh, that's for OnlyFans too, I guess.
Hashtag, come with me for the rest of the show.
Just the first part.
Hashtag K-O-K-O-M-O. All right, here we go. The wheel is spinning. The wheel is spinning. And the winner, trying to. Brandon Greer!
Congratulations. Excellent.
Congratulations, all right. Brandon. All right, folks, let's get the hell out of here, right? All right. Hey, next week, I think we're doing a true crime. It's not really a crime, but it's an interesting story.
Yes.
Yep.
It was put together by our very own Marcus Taylor.
Oh,
join us next time. Okay. Hey, we will talk to you next time on 1980s Now.
Until next time.
Colts.